better register.
Lobster.
Lobster goes.
Good man.
Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you kindly.
Good afternoon, everybody. Ivan Wolf is my name. I'm the OD this afternoon. It's an absolutely fabulous day. The breeze is there. There will be a few gusts, but nothing unmanageable. We'll try and get going as quickly as 3:30 and get you in off the water at 4:30. The breeze is northwesterly. You're on a very low tide, so we're going to start you and align directly from here to Goose Island.
I'm John Moore, principal of the Hare Island Sailing School in West Cork. On Regatta Day, we reflect on the work done by Fred Niehouse before us, who used to run the regatta. And then when we started the sailing school in 9 years ago, we took over from it to celebrate the tradition of boat building on the island, where, despite a population of 22 or of only 22 people, we have two native, and we call them daughters of the island, the Hare Island Lobster Boat and the Hare Island Sloop. So it celebrates boat building and marine activity.
The beauty about today is it's low tide. You will be able to see all the rocks down there, okay? And it'll be fantastic. So mind your fellow competitors, mind the boats, mind the pots, mind the rocks, mind the sand. Good luck, have a ball, and see you here about 5 o'clock, barbecue, prize giving, and wonderful prizes. So give it a good go, and we'll try and get everybody happy going home. Thank you.
Hare Island is a tiny island off West Cork. It's situated in Roaring Water Bay and, as with most islands off Ireland's coastline, has been part and parcel of a rich and vibrant seafaring tradition. Now, this documentary will tell the story of Hare Island's traditional Irish boat called the Towel Sail Yawls. It's also known as the Lobster Boat. We will recount the tough, nomadic fishing lifestyle of the islanders. We'll take a look at some of the craftsmen who built the boats in the first place. And we will reflect on how do you bring back a lost tradition from decay and indeed abandonment by those who hold a respect for history and expertise deep in their hearts.
From the 1870s down to the 1950s, the Towel Sail Yawls, or the lobster boats of Hare Island, they dominated the entire lobster fishery of the south coast.
That's Cormac Leavis, who is a maritime historian.
A couple of things about this particular fleet of boats that's unique, really. For one thing, there was very, very little lobster fishing going on the Irish coast at this particular time, except for this fleet of boats that were concentrated mainly in a small corner of Roaring Water Bay, and they would make long fishing trips lasting up to 6, 7, 8 weeks duration. In areas where there was lobstering, the small amount of lobster fishing that was going on in other areas was done primarily in rowing boats. But the Roaring Water Bay boats and the Hare Island boats were proper sailing boats. They were basically semi-nomadic. Over this 5, 6, 7 weeks, they would work, eat, sleep, cook in completely open boats. The only shelter they had in all that time was a tent that was erected in the bow of the boat when they were at anchor, which was known locally as a towel, which is an Irish word meaning a shelter on a boat. A harsh lifestyle.
Out in an open boat with only a towel to protect them from the elements. Now, that alone was hard, but considering there were three people on board during these trips, it seriously was a cramped space to live in as well. Here's Nigel Towes, who has a deep interest in traditional Irish wooden boats and indeed in preserving them as well.
And it's very interesting because it being used as a lobster boat, the centre of the boat was taken up with lobster pots. And that meant you could only work the boat from each end. So ahead of the mast, there was a space where, and not a large space, where everything had to be done, like rowing the boat, living in the boat even. In the stern, you have somebody there who could steer the boat. So there were only three oars on the boat. A bow oar, right up in the stem, where you sit on the foredeck, little very short foredeck. The flood oar, which would be just after the mast, you know, and very far ahead, really. And then a stern oar. One of the things about these lobster boats is that they worked quite a large area. Well, they sailed up to 100 miles of coastline, which is fantastic, really. Now, you couldn't row that way. Sails are practical. Sails are entirely practical. So, you know, no wind, you'd row. When there was a wind, you'd sail very well.
The mainstay of their diet was bread. They baked 2 cakes for each of the 3 meals during the day, kind of griddle cakes baked in a frying pan. As well as that, they caught fish like bream, wrasse, and so on, pollock, and potatoes were available from farmers living along the coast. They slept on straw under the towel, straw or heather that they plucked along the shore. They didn't get much sleep anyhow, for one thing, because the pots were hauled every 2 hours right through the night and day. Each boat carried from 24 to 28 pots, 20 to 28 pots, just depending on the size of the boats.
My name is Dylan Murphy. I'm Hare Island Ferry Services. I do a ferry from Connemore to Hare Island, to Shocking Island, and from Baltimore around 3. I go to 4 piers actually.
Can I ask you, how far back do your family go on living on this island?
Oh dear, I'd say maybe the 4th or 5th generation. You know, I think the story goes that we came from Baltimore. In the early 80s, you know.
The early 1800s?
1800s, yeah. My father and my uncle had a town sale yard, and there were nearly 50% of the island had town sale yard or more. And I often heard my father saying they was going down as far as yard. I mean, to the fair distance to go in a town sale yard and stay 6 weeks, like, it was. There must be a good men, like.
3 in a boat. Enduring all weathers, living under a canvas, the towel, hard going.
And sleeping in a bed of straw. But it was fantastic, like.
You were a lobster fisherman at one stage, using a towel sail, y'all.
Yeah, well, I fished in the lobster, and I fished lobsters all my life, really, you know.
Is there a knack to fishing lobster?
One thing you are, is lobster fishing, you have to respect the sea, because you're close in the rocks all the time. You're only yards away from rocks, like, and just the slightest thing going on and you're up in the rocks, like. Yeah, so you have to be very careful.
Can you swim?
Actually, I could not swim until while I was lobster fishing. I learned to swim down in the Baltimore pool about 5 years ago.
And what age are you now?
I'm over 70.
And do you think that a lot of fishermen didn't ever want to learn to swim?
Well, there was an old saying, all right, that it prolonged the agony, but I don't think that was only a myth, I think, you know. I wouldn't agree with it anyway. But, you see, what was wrong with us, I was an only child, and I was only about 20 yards away from the sea, and every time I go down to the sea, my mother said, get up or that you get drowned, come up or that you get drowned, you know.
You know, it's really pleasing to the eye to see a towel sail yawl out in the water, bobbing along through the waves and the wind. But for those who sail them, who know the feel and the behaviour of a well-designed boat from a poor one, and who appreciate that this particular design is from our forefathers, it makes this boat an extra special experience.
She sails remarkably well. I don't understand how it holds up to the wind as well as it does. It points very high. It's very fast, partly the hull shape, but there again, partly the sails. The design of the boat is pretty perfect, I think.
A perfect design. Now, that's a serious compliment from Nigel Towes, who eats and who drinks, and indeed who breathes boat design and boat building. The name Pyburn is synonymous with the towel sail yawl, and I got the privilege to speak to one member of the famous boat-building family who still resides on Hare Island.
It was my great-grandfather with the last boat builder that was here. That's 100 years ago, I'd say.
The word Pyburn doesn't sound like a County Cork name.
No, it's originated from Cornwall 8 generations ago.
And of course, Cornwall would have had a big boating tradition.
Did,
Have you any idea, why do they actually come to West Cork and particularly to the island? Any idea?
He came in a coaster up the Island River towards Skibbereen and he jumped ship, he didn't go back.
Was he in trouble?
No, I don't think so. And I didn't hear any.
I'm sure the captain wasn't pleased with the young fella jumping ship and skedaddling off.
He jumped ship and married an Irish woman and had 4 sons and learned for him to build boats. And one of them sons came to Hare Island and we're here since. That's about the size of it.
Back in the 1880s, or even before that, building a wooden boat without electricity, without power tools, without power saws was no mean feat. But if I was to be honest, from what I have observed in the last couple of days on this particular boatyard, with all its mod cons, I'll tell you, building a wooden boat even today is still a labour-intensive endeavour, as this man well knows.
My name is Liam Hagerty from Hagerty's Boatyard, Allcourt, Skibbereen, up the river from Baltimore, about 6 miles. And we've been set up here since 1948. I've started in the business in about 1977, and we've been building since. There are two types of boat construction. You have carvel and clinker. The carvel construction is the planks are edge on edge, and the clinker, they lap of each other by about 20 millimetre of a lap on the planking. Normally it would be large planking for bottom on oak, frames or ribs. The clinker would have been probably going back to Norwegian or Scandinavian times, or the Vikings, they had their all clinker boats, and that probably spread down from there. The carvel construction, all the heavy fishing boats would be of wood were built that way with the carvel planking on oak frames. To seal the boat to stop water coming in, you have to caulk it with oakum.
When you say caulkum with oakum, what does that mean?
Yeah, what you get there's a mallet and you have a set of cork irons. You get the oakum in what they call a hank of oakum.
What is it?
It's like a fibre rope. It's from the hemp plant, as far as I know, anyway.
And do we grow hemp here in Ireland?
No. I don't think so, anyway. Not that I know of, except illegal stuff.
And we'll say nothing about that now, so we won't. Okay.
Yeah, we get it from the chandleries in Cork or Skibbereen.
So when it comes in, is it in a sort of a kind of a sealed container?
No, it just come in wrapped in bags. And you have to separate it and roll it. You just tease it out and roll it and just with the cork irons, then you cork the seams. And
caulking the seams means, I know it's a great terminology from your perspective, but what does caulking the seams actually mean?
You get the irons and you just hammer it into the seams of the boat, between the planks.
Every single seam or every single section between each piece of wood has to be in some way filled, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you caulk every last inch of it has to be caulked up and paid with the linseed oil putty then to finish it off.
That's a huge amount of work.
Well, I mean, to someone that's used to what they're doing and can deal with it, you know, you can go through it pretty rapidly.
And it's treated with something, isn't it?
You know, it's a natural.
Can you smell it though?
I can, yeah, that's the natural smell of it. There's no treatment in that I know of anyway. Okay. There's some kind of natural oil. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. But,
and obviously, I know where you get this, you know, through different suppliers and chandleries and stuff. I mean, the likes of Christopher Pyburn, I'm just wondering, I mean, you know, where did he get it?
There would have been a lot of trade between the south of England and here. I mean, there was little trading vessels all the time, like, you know, so.
And so when it has been caulked, as you say, then you putty over it, is that it?
Yeah, we use linseed oil putty. In the old days, they'd have used red lead putty, but that can't be used anymore.
Too dangerous.
Yeah. Not supposed to. Yeah.
And what does the linseed do?
It's a natural oil, and it just preserves it. Sand it down again, and then you apply the paint, and that's basically it.
Would you put tar in it or anything?
No, not anymore anyway, because you know the kind of tar that was used in the old days wouldn't be readily available. So it's just, they're anti-fouled under the waterline and there's normal paints above it.
And in terms of wear and tear, how durable is it?
Well, I mean, there's boats fishing that are from the early 60s. So it depends really on the maintenance of the boat. I mean, if you don't look after it, be it timber or steel or whatever, it's not going to last. Tell
me about drying out a boat. Do you have to do that?
Well, these days it's better off for the fishing boats, if they were dry, especially the wooden ones, to dry them out in case there's worm got in anywhere, and that will kill them off for a couple of weeks out of the water.
And how would you know if you have a worm in your wood?
You'd have holes in it.
I know you're kind of being glib there, you know, there'd be holes in it, that's how you know there's water worms. But if there's holes in a boat, the boat will sink, so in some ways it wouldn't be that obvious.
That's true enough, yeah. There's some worm, it's a version of the Turida. They can get in through, they get into a little pinhole, and they can worm their way up and down the planks. They'd end up in which maybe you could have a row of holes. They wouldn't come through inside or outside, but they'd honeycomb out the planking.
And you'd be in trouble big time.
Well, you would, yeah.
So how long would it have to be out of the water for that little worm to be killed off?
They say 2 weeks, but if you have that kind of damage done, you'd have to take the planks off and refit new ones.
Now, I state the obvious when I say boats can't talk. But if they could, they would tell you about their life, the people who sailed on them, who worked them, who loved them, who tended to their care and their upkeep. And then they would tell you about their slow demise as life takes over and they are forgotten. The Hanora is a towel sail yawl that has had a complete resurgence from stinking decay to a vibrancy where mouldings of her structure have spawned many others to be built in recent times. Her islander, John Hart, remembers the Hanora in her youth.
When I was a kid, I used to sail her along with my father. Or the East game, and I used to weigh up the anchor before we leave, hang the rudder, and put in the tiller, of course. And then they'd give me a hand right in the sails. We'd blow away, no bother.
You're saying that your grandfather bought, did he order a boat to Pyburn at that time? Was it ordering or did he just have a spare one and he said, look, I'll buy that off you, do you know?
No, I'd say he ordered. You'd have to order, yeah.
And how much did you say that it actually cost?
I think £16 that time. It was a pile of money that time. We had it for a good few years and we sold it in the skull to a fellow by the name of Sean Barnett. So Sean went lobster fishing and he gave it to Dinny Murphy, I think.
For somebody who's never gone lobster fishing in their life ever, they don't know anything about it. What goes into a lobster fishing? There's a bit of a skill in it.
Oh God, yeah, there's a lot of skill in it though. You've got to bait the pots right and all them so often. Over time we had wooden pots, no battle pots, timber pots, so you'd have to haul them over 3 or 4 hours. In the daytime anyway. And, we'd be working around the clock sometimes.
Where would you sell those lobsters to?
She sent him Johnny McSweeney, Baltimore. Dermot and Michael, the two sons, used to collect them. They were the best buyers. They supplied us with pots and ropes, so they started the year, they would charge us nothing, and we pay away. And the bait also.
And how much of a rope would you actually take with you?
Oh, we'd have a few coils. There'd be 12 pounds between each spot. You know, we'd have 9 or 10 coils of rope, I suppose. Had a cost of most 100 pounds at the time, I suppose. We'd get the pots for 50. Tin bob a pot at the time in all the days there were.
And did you ever make your own pots?
Oh, we did in all the days, the rat pots, yeah, before our time. My father used to make them there for the tow sail boats. And the battle pots came in there for the best for the crayfish.
You know when you were growing up, did you ever hear stories, they say, of your granddad, you know, and he sailing, proper sailing, the towel sail yawls? And now I know you were saying that later on you were using the engine and sure that was much easier and safer as well. But, you know, for the lads who didn't have the engines, how did they manage it at all?
Oh God, they used to row the boats by 2 long hours, yeah, and sail them then, like, you know. They knew about boats that time. If we gave a boat to them now, they wouldn't be able to row up the belly up.
No, but these lads, these men, they were tough men.
Oh, they were great men. They were like giants. They were like giants. They knew what they were at, like, they knew the weather and they knew everything. They knew when it would be getting bad and they knew about the weather and they'd been before the storm, you know, we would have to watch that.
Now, people in communities had their own way of preparing a boat for the water. And the Hare Islanders, they were no different. Did ye tar her first and then put her into the water, or was it into the water first and tar her?
No, we had her tar first. We used to tar her underneath and inside. Then we'd take her out and we'd put her out there in the morning for about a week. Let her sink her water.
You'd sink her?
Yeah, take the spile out of her, the plug.
Now, tell me why you'd let her sink away there in her own steam, as you say.
Because when she goes sailing, then she'd be all sealed up for sailing. Like when she go down her side, she wouldn't be making no water into the sides.
So what you're doing is you're actually swelling the timbers.
Yeah, that was the best way to do it.
How would you actually get her out of the water? She would be dead heavy then.
I know, we'd do her on the beach. We'd do her on the beach over there, in the cool track, we call it. Right. And lay her down her side, one side at a time.
And so painting it was the last thing that you do then?
Painting was the last thing, stand the mast in and put aboard the sails and the gaff and stuff and get her started out.
And the Hanora served the Hart family for many a long year to come. But after she had been finally sold, and sold on again later, she was almost completely forgotten and left to the elements to reclaim her back into nature. That is, until Nigel Towse came upon her.
Well, my interest in Hanora was sparked off originally by a project that I was doing, building a mackerel yawl. I needed information, and I advertised in the local paper for photographs and information on these mackerel boats. Part of the result of that was somebody told me about the mackerel boat that was down by the mill in Skull in the mud, and I went to look at it, and it wasn't a mackerel boat, it was a lobster boat. A few years later, when our children were in school in Skull, we rented a house there, and fortunately, by some strange chance, our next door neighbours were the people who owned this boat. He was an old man. Between the jigs and the reels, he gave it to me, having already sold it to somebody else who didn't take it away, but just removed the engine out of it. But it had been lying there for many years, and there was a septic tank nearby, for instance, which was overflowing into it. There was a tree had fallen across it and knocked the starboard quarter out of it. She was in pretty poor state, but I'd say three quarters of what was there was original. So there was an example of everything. The tops of the frames, you could tell how wide the gunwales were. Everything was there, really, even bits of moulding on the planks underneath all the tar. And there was a scratch mould, bead mould, all around the inside of the top plank and the outside of the gunwales. It must have been built of very good wood, very good oak. Some of it is still in the boat now, but not very much. So having got it away from the mill, Liam Hegarty suggested we take it back to the yard. I was working there at the time, which we did do, and in my spare time I propped her up and tried to straighten her up. I made a new stern post and transom for it just to hold the planking together at the back of the stern there, and I chipped all the tar out of it and cleaned it up best I could, and you could see that she was constructed traditionally with timber trunnels holding the frames to the keel and the stem post and to the forward knee. That was all trundled in, and the top frames to the ground timbers were all trundled together. And she sat there for a while, and a guy from Baltimore came up to have a look one day, Colin Collinan. He said, "I'd like to have one of these," and they decided they were going to order one. So Liam took moulds off it. So that's what they did. They built a boat, a replica, very similar to the Hanora. That was very successful. From that, there were four other replicas made.
It's a balmy summer evening down here in West Cork, and the Ballydehob Summer Festival is in full swing, just as Chairman Barry O'Brien explains.
This festival's going on over 30 years. I'm 23 years involved in it. And this boat, which we have here today, the old boats, the old timber boats along the coast, they come in here every year. It's an annual event which coincides with our festival. And we use this, as you see, the barbecue and all that as a kind of a fundraiser for it. A lot of the old boats were done up locally in local boat yards. There were the old lobster boats and wholesale yards and all that. So they're, very pretty old boats, but they're looking good now and they're sailing them. So it's a nice evening.
And how many are taking part in the flotilla today?
Well, I was talking to Cormac Leavis, Cormac, who would have one, and Cormac tells me that there could be, I think, up to 37 or 8 old boats coming in this evening. That would be mainly wooden boats now, of different descriptions, but more or less the lobster boats is the main one, yeah.
So you're just waiting for high tide?
We're waiting for high tide. High tide now won't be until about 7:30, 8:30, but some of the boats will come up before that. We're expecting the boats up, I would say, in the next, what time is it now, 7:45? Within the next half an hour, that way you should see the first of the sails coming around the bind outside.
So how did you enjoy the festivities?
Oh, it was a wonderful occasion. This is our third Clinuin na Mod at Valley Hobbin, and apart from the first one, this was the best, I think. The weather was perfect, the wind was perfect for the sailors, they say. They could have done with a little bit more, but it got them in all safely. And everything worked perfectly. Yes.
Mihalo Crowley is my name, and I have a boat with John Colloran. We share the ownership of it, so we have it about 10 years now. I never sailed before I had a boat like this, so it was all new to me. I was just interested because I have a holiday home in Hare Island, and I used to love going because they're originally from Hare Island. So that was the attraction.
What is she like to sail?
She's beautiful. The one thing we have done is we have refined it. So we have made some changes. We've made the sail smaller. We've taken out some of the lead. You know, we've reduced the weight of the gaff, and she's sailing much better. So it's like a work in progress.
And she's probably safer as well.
Much safer. Much safer, yeah. Much safer, yeah. And much more enjoyable.
Have you ever gone lobster sailing in it, or lobster fishing in it?
No. No.
Sacrilege.
And Richie Pyburn gives me a slagging over it. He says, where are the lobster pots? So I said, well, we're only holiday makers, we can't fish. So.
The Townsail yawls built at Hegarty's boatyard are beautiful boats, and as you heard, sail really well. But the Hanora, from which the mouldings were taken to make those replicas, is an original lobster boat. She was built originally back in 1892. Now, bringing something back from almost obscurity is very special indeed for Nigel Towes.
We're looking at the book by Cormac Leavis entitled Townsail Yawls, The Lobster Boats of Hare Island and Roaring Water Bay. Now, when you were showing me this book, you made a beeline for this particular photograph on page 66. Just describe the photograph and tell me why quite too significant.
The Hanora was relaunched in 2005, and to me, it was important to get the boat as authentic as possible. I mean, to make a replica of something is one thing, but to have a piece of wood, a working piece of wood, a boat, you know, that people worked in, you know, built in 1892, it's something tangible that you can touch. It's a link to the past. But one of the most important things about the project was that there was another link to the past, that Jack Pyburn was still alive. He's now dead, bless him. His father built the boat, and Sean Hart is still alive, whose father had the boat built. And they were there that day when we launched the boat. It was an emotional experience for me, really.
And still is.
Oh, it still is, yeah. Tears in my eyes at the moment. That's no joke either. That's how it is.
I suppose, in some ways, what you have done, I mean, you were the broker to bring something back from literally a skeletal form of just rot and decay to something that lives and breathes and excites and gives joy to so many people today. But I think it must have been very significant for the likes of Jack Pyburn and Sean Hart as well to be there to see what it is that you'd actually created.
Especially for Jack now. It wasn't long after that Jack died, and it meant so much to him. It really did, you know.
So when all the hard work is done and the achievement is a good, solid feeling in our psyche, we begin to relax. And in age-old tradition, we begin to compete against one another to win. So let's make our way back to the Hare Island Regatta and the aftermath of the race. So congratulations. Tell me what your name is, first of all.
Ian Wright.
And what was the name of your boat?
It was the Rose. Oops, I nearly forgot.
What are you drinking there? No. Well, listen, what were the conditions like out there?
They were wonderful. I mean, breezy enough to make it, yeah, exciting, but kind of safe but exciting. But you could push a boat hard. And that was the first time I'd sailed that boat. And so not knowing what she could do, it was challenging, but so much fun. It was wonderful.
And you beat the person who normally wins time and time and time again. How does that feel?
Oh, that was stunning. We went out and said, the only thing we're going to try and do is beat Nigel. But I didn't think we stood a chance. And we had a stunning start, and then we held on to him the whole time, and we couldn't believe it. I mean, it was just, yeah, we didn't actually take in any of the other boats. As long as we were ahead of the Nore, it was magic.
And tell me, who owns the Rose?
John Densmond. So thank you, John. I don't know whether John even knows I skipped it at this stage, but so it was very short notice, and so somehow that made it even more exciting. It was a magic day.
Well, listen, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So how was it like out in the water?
It was exciting today, really, because it's so blustery, you know, and it's a choice of what you have in the way of reefs in, and you needed no reefs for downwind sailing because it was very windy. But for when you were beating, when you were on the wind, you know, we had too much sail up, really. And the Ian with John Desmond's loves the boat there, they kept their reef in, and they stole it. They stole the march on us, really. So, yeah, we came second.
And was there any risk at all of maybe going over or anything like that? Because I thought at one stage it looked a bit dodgy.
Well, we all took a bit of water, I think, today.
Most unusual.
Fairly unusual, yeah, unusual. Racing, isn't it? It's what does you.
No. It's the competitiveness of you who didn't want to put a reef in the first place. Am I wrong?
No, I didn't want to put any reef in, no. In fact, that's endorsed it now for me, you know. Next time, I'm not going to even think twice about it.
Thank you very much, everybody, and safe home.
From a blustery Hare Island, I'm Caroline Brennan. Many thanks for listening. This series has been kindly funded by the Sound and Vision Scheme, which is a funding scheme from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.